So here we are, continuing through Advent, this season where we acknowledge the struggles of the world. This is one of the gifts of Advent, as opposed to jumping right to Christmas, is we can be honest about the struggles and the joys of this celebration of God entering into the world, God entering into our reality at Christmas. The themes of that we've been working through, we've had hope, today is peace, there's also joy and love. These are four themes that we are created to deeply desire and need these things. And as we move through this, we are reminded that each one, hope, peace, joy, and love, is represented and met in the person of Jesus, who is God with us. Today, as we consider the idea of peace, I got up relatively early this morning, did several things, and then, you know, I look at the news feed. Top of the list. BBC, live from Gaza. We can't help but be deeply aware of the lack of peace in much of our world. And peace is not just the absence of conflict. You know, if they weren't shooting at each other in parts of the world, that doesn't necessarily mean there's peace. Because at its heart, peace is not the lack of conflict. It is the rightness of things. And probably all of us have experienced a time where, you know, we weren't necessarily actively shouting at or shooting at metaphorically someone, but there wasn't a rightness there. There was a tension. War is the absence of peace, but so is poverty and hunger and broken relationships and disease and mental illness. These are all things that are not peace. Some of the things that break peace in the world are, you can point a finger and say, that's the fault, like that person is doing something to break peace. Sometimes it's a system designed to break peace. There are even theological systems that seem to revel in and encourage chaos and conflict rather than working towards peace. And in our world, where it seems the troubles are the ones that get the clicks, the bad news is the stuff that gets pushed to the top of the algorithms, the places where peace is lacking are often right in our faces. The psalmist cried out, "How long, O Lord?" And that's something I think a lot of us at times feel that and resonate with that cry. When things go on for a long period of time without peace, there's a strong tendency to give up on the possibility of peace. That peace is just some mythical thing out there that we long for, but it's not going to happen. Or for people who have been raised to be told that God cares about things, the longer we live with this brokenness, it's easy to give up on the idea that God cares about it at all, or that God's going to intervene at all. It's one of the major objections I hear against Christianity. You know, sometimes it's spoken about big issues. You know, if there's really a God, why does God allow, pick the big issue, famine, disease, violent dictators, you know, people who perpetuate significant evil. Sometimes the objection isn't about the big thing, it's about a deeply personal thing. If there's really a God, why did he allow my loved one to die or that terrible experience to happen to me? And sometimes moving beyond the brokenness, the objection continues. You know, if there's a God, and God can't do anything about those things, then God really doesn't have any power. And if God doesn't have any power, then why would I bother with God? Or, you know, if there's a God and he doesn't do anything about those things, then that God obviously can't be love. So why would that God be worthy of any type of worship? Anybody heard any objections like those? Those are people, those objections come from people who are being honest about the lack of peace in the world. The text we're considering from the lectionary today, it was written to people who were very aware of the brokenness and struggle in the world. For many years, they had been expectant that God was going to break into the world and make things right. But the longer they lived, the longer they waited, and God didn't seem any closer to coming. God wasn't acting in ways they'd been taught and they had expected. Hard and difficult and horrible things continued to happen. And as a result, some people looked around. People in the church looked around and said, you know what? Things are bad and God was supposed to make them right and he hasn't yet. So you got to conclude that God isn't going to make things right. Perhaps some of them decided that God didn't really care about what was going on in their lives. Perhaps others began to teach that the horrible things in the world, that was God acting. You'll hear this in church context today, that this horrible stuff, that is God acting. Because God is in charge of everything, and so we have to give God responsibility for these horrible things. The truth is, when we get to 2 Peter and the passage from the lectionary today, we don't know exactly what their teaching was. Peter describes a group of people that are living without really caring about the mess of the world around them. They've gotten to a place that it seems they've concluded, you know what, since God doesn't care about the mess in the world, why should we care about the mess in the world? We may as well live for our own strength, our own power, our own comfort, our own gain, our own pleasure. And rather than lamenting the lack of peace, they actually began to add to the mess. Again, this was people in the church, and they started to teach others to live this way too. We've lived this long and God hasn't intervened, so God must not be, and so we can just do what we want. If God doesn't care, why should we? And in response to this way of teaching and living, Peter in 2 Peter chapter 3 writes these words. It says, a day is like 1,000 years to the Lord, and 1,000 years is like a day. That's reference to something that's written in the Psalms. It says, the Lord isn't really being slow about his promise, as some people think. No, he's being patient for your sake. He doesn't want anyone to be destroyed. He wants everyone to repent. But the day of the Lord will come, as unexpectedly as a thief. Then the heavens will pass away with a terrible noise, and the very elements themselves will disappear in fire, and the earth and everything on it will be found to deserve judgment. Since everything around us is going to be destroyed like this, what holy and godly lives you should live, looking forward to the day of God and hurrying it along. On that day, he will set the heavens on fire and the elements will melt away in the flames. But we are looking forward to the new heavens and new earth as he has promised, a world filled with God's righteousness. And so, dear friends, while you are waiting for these things to happen, make every effort to be found living peaceful lives that are pure and blameless in his sight. In this brief response to some people who are not pursuing and longing for God's peace anymore, Peter clarifies a few things for his readers. You know, while we long and wait for God's peace to break into our world, these are things that are good for us to hear. The first is a reminder about what is true of God and God's heart. The second is a promise about God's response to the brokenness. And the third is an encouragement for how God's people, how we should live in this time of waiting. First, what's true about God and God's heart as we struggle through the mess of this world? What's true is that God is there. That God's perspective is different than ours is. And God is working for our sake, not his own. We tend to think that God is distant because we don't sense God, or we don't see God acting in ways that we want or we expect. But Peter assures us that just because we can't see what's happening, God hasn't gone anywhere. God has a different perspective than we do. You know, our perspective is shaped by our sense of time, our limited knowledge of what's going on around the world. God, however, doesn't have those same limitations. In the men's thing on Tuesday morning, somebody referenced a Christian thinker who suggested that humanity could be as old as 500,000 years. I don't know whether that's true or not, but if you think about that, for the people who live to be 80, 90, or 100 years old, that kind of time is just unfathomable. We can't even begin to comprehend it. But God sees things differently. I don't believe this is meant to be taken exactly literally, but it says that to God, 1,000 years is like a day. The point is that God doesn't see time like we do. God doesn't engage with time. God is not experiencing things like we do. We want God to react now in our time and on our whim without any sense of the bigger picture. And God is seeing something much bigger with a different timeline and a different perspective. And the fact that God doesn't act in my time when I want doesn't mean that God doesn't care. Most of us who are parents can relate to this sense that kids think we don't care if we don't act on their timeline, not realizing that maybe there's something bigger that they don't understand. We need to accept that that is true for God as well. In fact, Peter suggests that not only does the delay, the things not happening in our time, does that mean that God doesn't care? Quite the opposite is true. God is being patient for our sake. Because God is love, because God longs for the best for all of his creation, God has enduring patience for people and the mess we can make of things. It's patience that we rarely have for each other. But it does lead us to the next thing Peter discusses, that God is there, God cares, God has a different perspective than we do. But he does talk that God is going to respond to the brokenness in the world. It says God is patient for our sake. And that God will someday act to make things fully right again. God is going to act to bring things to a place of rightness, shalom, peace. Here, Peter uses some very strong language to describe an inevitable judgment that's going to come when we can't predict it or expect it. He uses the image of like this fire blowing through and burning up everything that can be burned up in its path. When we think about judgment in the Bible, I want to be very clear, there's lots of different pictures for what that could look like. And so to take any one of them literally is to kind of ignore the other ones. So I think we have to kind of understand this as a real but metaphorical image that God is going to act in a way that clears out what needs to be cleared out in order for peace to reign. Fire is often used in the Bible to describe the refining process, the things that contaminate are burned up to leave behind what is pure. When I read this image of a fire roaring through, I immediately thought about forest fires that burn through, but they actually leave behind a richness that allows something healthy to grow up in its place. Or a lava flow. Some of the richest soil in the world is where lava has come in the past and kind of devastated everything in its path, but it left behind something rich for growth to thrive in. Seems to me that Peter's describing that God is eventually going to act in a way that's going to burn up all that is destructive and peace-breaking in the world. When we are oppressed, when we are in the midst of conflict, and the vast majority of us in this room have not experienced what many in the world are experiencing at this exact moment. But when you're in that place and this cry of, like, how long, O Lord? It seems like no matter how long we wait, it's too long because of just the horror of what we're experiencing. To hold on to the hope that God is going to act to bring things right is something that we need to hold on to. And I have to admit, from where I sit in relative comfort, I get tension with this. I don't like the idea of a picture of God acting as a judge that's going to have to clear things out, including some people who refuse to join in God's peace project, in order for there to be peace in the world. I feel really uncomfortable with that. I struggle with that. But if the alternative is that peace never comes, I struggle with that too. This is a place of tension that we have. From the very beginning, God's intention was that people would be partnering with God to bring rightness into the world. That was what was given to people before the fall in Eden. That was humanity's responsibility, to join in helping creation to thrive. Instead, humanity has worked against it. In Jesus, God reinitiated this project. He's invited us to join in it, and many have, but many have not. And God is being patient with us. God's patience does not mean God doesn't care. In fact, quite the opposite. God's patience means God does care, but the day is going to come. I don't know when, don't know what it's going to look like. Anybody who tells you like this is exactly what it's going to look like is guessing. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like. But the day is going to come when God is going to make all things right again. We have a chance to be a part of that, partnering in that. I don't know if there's any way for those of us who are struggling to like God's timing in it. But let's not interpret our struggle and our waiting to mean that God's absent or uncaring. The day is going to come when God is going to act and act decisively to bring things to a place of peace, of rightness, of shalom. As Peter puts it, we're looking forward to the new heavens and new earth he has promised, a world filled with God's righteousness. It's just that right now, we're in a time of waiting for that new reality to come. And that brings us to Peter's third point. Okay, God's there. God has a different perspective than we do, but God does do things for our good. And God is being patient with us, but God is going to act one day. Those are things that are kind of outside of our control. The question comes, and so what do we do in this time of waiting? And that's Peter's whole point in all of this. He gets to this, and this, his words give us the answer. And so, dear friends, while you are waiting for these things to happen, make every effort to be found living peaceful lives that are pure and blameless in his sight. God's going to bring this righteousness to bear in the whole world. In the meantime, what should we be doing? We should work to live this kind of life right now. It's easy to get caught up in anger about injustice, frustration over pain, or trying to figure out maybe why specific things are happening. It's also easy to find ourselves longing for the day when God's going to make all things right and dreaming of an end of the struggle, hoping for things to be restored. It's good to be aware. We need to be aware of the injustice in the world, but focusing on it so much and sitting there like, okay, God, you need to act, can sometimes prevent us from doing the thing that we're supposed to be doing right now. At the same time as we're calling out to God to act, we need to be living out the kind of response that we're supposed to have. In the midst of the injustice, in the midst of the waiting, we have a role to play in helping to bring God's peace, his righteousness, his shalom to come to bear in this world. In Peter's words, we should make every effort to live peaceful lives that are pure and blameless in God's sight. I'm convinced that the essence of a pure and blameless life is one that is in alignment with the love of Jesus, one that is oriented towards others with love. In the words of the ancient prophet, It's a life that seeks justice, loves mercy, and walks humbly with God. It's not trying to force God's hand to action. It's not trying to execute God's judgment on people ourselves. It's living as God's hands of love in the world we are in and inviting others to join us in this way of peace. Peter reminds us that God is there. God deeply cares about the pain and struggle in the world. God isn't ignoring it. It's certainly not perpetrating it. God is being patient with humanity, longing for all who will to come into alignment with him in his heart. And when the pain is overwhelming, we can be assured that the day will come when God's going to act in the world to bring divine justice to bear. Even though we don't know exactly how that's going to look. At some point, that's what's going to be necessary for shalom, for God's peace to thrive in the world. In the meantime, while we wait, may we be men and women, may we be a church that seeks to live peaceful lives, lives that foster God's shalom and rightness in the midst of the mess. I'm going to leave you with the blessing we often read from Numbers chapter 6. As you go today, may the Lord bless you and protect you. May the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show you his favor and give you his peace. God bless. Go in peace.